This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 4, Episode 29. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com and you can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
My name's David Hinchliffe and this week I'm joined by Mark Garraway. Well, welcome to the show, Garris. You're on the line from home this week, are you?
I am. I've got one day at home this week, and this is it. So I'm sitting on the sofa. I've sent the dog off to doggy daycare, and we should have a peaceful few minutes together, mate.
Fantastic. Okay. Well, that's always nice, yeah, because you often broadcast from wide and varied locations, so it's nice to have somewhere settled and distraction-free.
Better being at home and being in hotel rooms, as I've done the last few from, mate, that is for sure.
Well, of course, we've had some exciting news for English cricket this week. It being the, this week just gone, I should have said. It being a crushing victory in the Ashes for the England team. And there's been a lot of press coverage over what's happening with Australian cricket and what's happening with English cricket. I think there's been a general trend in the media to lean on 2020 as one of the big problems that's causing Australia to be not quite so good as Test cricket as they used to be a few years ago. And that got me to thinking about 2020 in general, because it's not a new thing to blame limited over cricket for the decline of longer formats. So, but there's definitely a leaning towards limited over cricket 2020, 50 over, 40 over cricket. And I was wondering, from your point of view, Gareth, what kind of challenges does that pose to coaches and to players who need to live in this world where you need to score great big hundreds one day and then hit 60 in 23 balls the next?
Well, it poses challenges, but I think there are any good ones. And I have to say, I don't subscribe to the view that 2020 is causing Australia problems for the reasons that you said. You know, everybody's playing 2020 cricket. The England team are playing 2020 cricket. Yes. South Africans are, and it isn't down to that. There's if it contributes by 1%, then it would be a bigger margin than I thought it would do. And I think there's other things that are going on both within the England camp and the structure within England, which has been something that's been worked on for a significant amount of years, and not just as a result of being beaten 5-0 in Australia, but a long, long time before that. And as the Australian system was built probably from the mid-80s through to 2007 and bore fruit, it takes a long time. And I think England have got it right, and they would probably be competitive against some of Australia's better teams. And it just so happens that this Australian side, whilst has been competitive in that first test match, isn't the quality that it used to be. But going back to your question about longer forms and shorter forms, that is the reality of the world. And it doesn't just happen at international level. It doesn't just happen at county or state level. But it's something that we have on a day-to-day basis in our clubs, isn't it? Because, you know, 2020 gets thrust in the middle of a week or maybe on a Sunday. And then, you know, we're asked to play 50-over cricket, 45-over cricket. And although it's only 20 or 30 overs difference, there's seriously different tactics and techniques and approaches that need to be adopted. And I think that's what we all cope with. So, whether it be your team that you play for on a Saturday, David, or whether it be the England team that Andy Flower and Ashley Giles are overseeing at the moment.
Yeah, it is. It's an easy thing to blame, isn't it, to say, well, you know, 2020, it's all a bit of hit and giggle, although, you know, these days it's not so much that. But it's an easy thing to blame, isn't it? I'd be interested to see some kind of statistical analysis about the amount of 2020 cricket that's played by players and how that reflects in batting averages across long periods and across shorter periods, and to see if there's any trends there. That would be interesting to see some kind of comparison of whether it does have an influence or not, because instinctively you think to yourself, well, it must have some kind of an influence if you need to psychologically adjust from one to the other. And can you do that with the flick of a switch? I guess some people can and some people can't, but more generally speaking, what's your feeling on this? Do you feel that there's work to be done in helping players being able to flick the switch more effectively?
Definitely, because that's the reality of the world that we are in and we're more likely to go towards, I think. We do need to get better at it. I'm not ignoring that fact. And I, too, would be very interested in that research. And my sense would be that there may be a correlation. But what we're beginning to find now, I think, and if you look at, I mean, you know, we don't want to harp on about the England side and say they're B's and E's, but they're presently probably getting a lot of their stuff more right than their opposition. You know, that showed in India when they went there and won for the first time in a very long time, and it's showing here as well. But you look at the evolution of Alistair Cook. Now, there's somebody who's obviously flipping the switch pretty well, because there were a few years ago that people would say that he wasn't able to play in the short format, and now I would suggest it would be interesting to see how he goes over the course of the next year or so, because I know that he wants to play 2020 cricket as well. And there's no reason why his game that's been so successful at 50-over cricket can't flip another switch to then go into 2020, because, you know, he's on top of his game and he's a mature cricketer. But then we look at somebody like Jonathan Trott, that's obviously geared towards 50-over and test cricket. And the question that I've got is, are we going to see players falling into two formats rather than the three now? Because there's a drop-off, and we did a thing up at Edinburgh the other week where we were looking across the best players in the world, and actually when we looked at the top 10s and when we talked as a group of 25 coaches about it, we couldn't really name people that were doing it, or a number of people that were doing it consistently across three formats. So I think that is tricky. But to get two formats right, I don't think is that difficult, whether that be 2020 and 50 over, or as in Jonathan Trott's case and Alistair Cook's case, getting that 50 over and test match cricket right. It would be more of a challenge to get all three across the board, and there aren't too many people that do that. And even watching the domestic 2020 over here at the moment, it was interesting to hear Mike Atherton on commentary last night talking about Alex Hales, who's somebody who's really struggled in the longer format of a game this year. So there could be something in it. My sense says that two is easier to manage than three, but I would love to see some stats around that.
Yeah, it would be fascinating to find out more about that. So then the next question from a coaching point of view is, you have young players who are playing multiple formats, even at lower levels, even at the type of level, the club level. You know, you have the lad who's playing 2020 in the week, and then maybe he's playing 50-over match on a Saturday and a 40-over match on a Sunday, something like that. So the challenge then is, how do you incorporate that kind of ability to flick between formats into a coaching structure?
Yeah, so it's all about decision-making and risk-taking from a batting perspective. And, you know, the game gets shortened in 50 overs down to a 5-over period that you've got to be on top of your game. And equally in a 2020 game, you know, every ball matters. So we talk about tempo a lot. We talk about decision-making. We talk about, assessing risk and what shots are available. And what I find is that the best players are the ones that have their super strengths. They've got their go-to boundaries, they've got their go-to ones, and they get very, very good at those. And when a player or a bowler tries to cut you off from doing those, then they find another way of scoring, whether that be to move laterally across the crease or to come down the wicket, which actually allows them to hit the ball in the same area, but they're just being a bit more proactive before ball release. So those are the things that I'd talk to a batter about, and you don't need to change your game hugely. You just need to adapt yourself into risk-taking, decision-making, and if you can do that, then you'll be successful. From a bowling point of view, it's all about deployment of your skills, and, you know, a Yorker is a good ball across all of the formats. I think we're all in agreement of that. But obviously, you deploy it at different times and maybe a little bit more frequently over the course of a 2020 game than you would do over a 50-over game. So again, it's about looking at the situation, looking at a game format, and seeing what fits. You know, your slower ball bouncer might be something that you bowl more regularly in 50-over cricket in certain stages of a game. And it's about deployment to me. So our roles as a coach, as well as developing those skills physically, is also to talk about how you deploy those. And to me, you can never have too many conversations along those lines to make people more and more aware of what they're doing and how they can fit their skills, which most people have got now. You know, I watched a game of under 11 cricket the other day, and I was astounded by the variety of skills that people, that the players had had. And really, our job working with players like that isn't necessarily to broaden their horizons and give them even more skills. It's about deploying those skills appropriately, given the format that you're playing. So that's the skill of a coach to me.
Okay, let's wrap up this section with the yes-no round. Three questions. Karras and I can only answer yes or no to, no matter how much more we want to say. So, Karras, you ready for action?
I certainly am.
First question. Effective practice is fun practice.
Oh, that's a great one. Yes.
I'm going to go with no.
Yeah, that's good, because I'm close to no. Yeah, that's a good question, that.
Second question. Perfection is a distraction.
Yes.
Yes. Question three. Catches win matches.
Yes.
Yes. A couple of tight ones in there.
Yeah, good questions, those. Where did they come from?
My brain.
Well done. They're brilliant. Well done, those.
Time now for the questions section. A couple of questions, and we pick the best question of the week, and that wins a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So I'll be in charge of reading the questions this week because, as I didn't mention earlier, Berners is away. He's on tour. We're not sure exactly where, but we were speculating on possible locations earlier before the show started. So you can read into that what you will. Anyway, the first question is from Ramesh, and Ramesh has a question about fielding in the slips. He said, I've started fielding as a regular slip fielder in my club team. It's been about a month and a half, but every time I do it, I feel lower back pain when I take the ready position, which affects my concentration. Can you give me some exercises which I can use as a prehabilitation tool to finish the back pain? Gareth, back pain in the slips. Any experiences?
No. No, I haven't got any personal experiences. I mean, we can talk about prehab and we'll go on to that in a minute. I would like to encourage you to do some experimentation around your ready position. So obviously we don't know what your ready position looks like, but what we do know is that some people at slip, if you could picture a Mark Waugh, would have been more upright and not so bent over. So his back would have been a bit flatter, less flexion in his legs, and he was a phenomenal slip fielder. Similar to somebody like Andrew Strauss, whose feet would be slightly closer together and a little bit more upright, and when they both catch, they put their head into the ball and they caught the ball. Whereas you look at somebody like a Flintoff and now an Alistair Cook, who's doing some slip field, and you see them in more crouched positions where they've bent from their legs. So whichever one you're presently doing, maybe get somebody to take a picture of your ready position on the on a camera phone or something to show you, and then just experiment with either narrowing the feet or widening the feet or bending the legs or whatever to see if it takes a little bit of pressure off the back. And of course, the trouble with slip fielding is that you do it over and over again. It's the closest thing, I suppose, to wicket keeping. And if you're not in a comfortable position, then you're not likely to be able to concentrate fully, which is what you talked about in your question. So from a technical point of view, just because... And I go back, you have a look at the Australian slip cordon at the moment. You know, I'm not saying they're a bad slip cordon in there at all, but most of them bend down a heck of a long way. So they got bent, their knees are really bent, their hands are really low. And it's unusual that everybody needs to be in that very same position in the slips, because if you're there for 6 hours in a day, A, you've got to be concentrating, and B, you want as few distractions as possible, whether it be your back, your knees, or whatever the case may be. So find your own way. Get somebody to take a picture of you and experiment with slightly wider feet or narrower feet or bending your legs a little bit more, and see what impact an actual different ready stance or ready position can make to you. Do you want to talk about prehab now, David? And then I can come back and add anything extra to that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the key with this kind of thing is that there isn't one solution that fixes everyone's problem, because people broadly fit into two categories. They're either, well, three really. You get the person who is in the middle, you get the person who's a bit too stiff, and the person who's a bit too flexible. And both of those things can cause problems. But if you're a bit too stiff, you need to work on your flexibility. And if you're a bit too flexible, you need to work on your stability. So it's a bit of a it, you it's a bit of a tough one to say without being able to see someone and test someone and see how they move at their hips and how they move at their ankles particularly, and also their upper spine. Those are the three areas where flexibility comes into it. And then you've got the core, the famous core, of course, which keeps the lower back stable. So you might have to try a couple of different things and see what works. Generally speaking, if you look to mobilize your hips and your ankles, stretching through stretching, active stretching, passive stretching, static stretching, lots and lots of stretching, then that will help you. And also, if you look to strengthen your core musculature, that will help you as well. When I talk about the core, I also talk about the glutes, because often with back pain, what you find is the glutes aren't working hard enough when you get into certain athletic positions, and the classic slip catching position is very athletic, ready to jump around and catch the ball, then the back takes the strain, and that's where you can activate your glutes a little bit more before you go out onto the field. And even when you're out there, the classic glute bridge, which is when you lie on your back, put your feet flat on the ground, then lift your hips up towards the sky to make a sort of triangle shape with your legs, with the knees at the corner of the triangle. That fires the glutes. You can hold that for about 30 seconds and then just drop back down again. Do that a couple of times and you'll find that sort of gets the glutes firing, and that might make a difference. A lot of the time, whenever anyone in my side complains, "Oh, my back is stiff," instead of saying, "Well, stretch out your back," it's a bit stretching out your back is a bit like picking a scab. It might feel good at the time, but it's not very good for healing. So instead of picking the scab of stretching your back, try activating the glutes with a glute bridge. And then stretching the front of your hips is the other thing. If you're a bit stiff at the front of your hips, and if you sit down for a job, which a lot of people do these days, working on computers, working in an office, driving around, then your hip flexors get shortened, and you have to do a little bit of work of stretching them back out again. And you can do that by kneeling with one leg down on the ground and then pushing your hip forward, so you can stretch out that front of the hip, and you can do both sides to help with that. These are slightly sort of shots in the dark, if you like, but those are two really good areas that you can work on with the hip flexibility and activating the glutes, and that can make a big difference.
Spot on, absolutely spot on. And you're right. We're speculating here, but I think that there's some great ideas. You've got some brilliant prehab advice there, which is good prehab advice for anybody, really. The combination of stretching and stability is crucial, and it is a balance. That has to be met, and then also to experiment with your ready position and just see what works for you. Because, as I say, people have stood at slip in very different ways over the years and been very, very successful. But the best ones that I've seen and I've worked alongside have been the ones that have been comfortable. Because it's the same as batting. If you're not comfortable, then that's a distraction that can get in the way. And we know that slip, you could stand there for 4 or 5 games and not get a sniff, and then all of a sudden two come along in 3 balls, like Alistair Cook had, or three come along in 10 balls, like Alistair Cook had at Trent Bridge. So you've got to be ready, haven't you? You've got to be able to react, but you can't do that if you're not in a comfortable position, and you haven't been in the comfortable position for the last day and a half.
Okay, next question is from Adineth. And he's also got some injury problems. He's also got some back pain. And he says he feels like he has a mixed action. He's a bowler with a mixed action. His back hurts after each delivery, and he can feel the twist. So, what's the quickest and the most efficient way to correct a mixed action? I guess the first question is he diagnosing himself correctly there?
Yeah, I mean, crikey, there's lots of questions, and we generally, and again, you know, this is a country by country thing, but in England presently, we don't really talk about mixed actions. The research that has been done by a number of people at Loughborough, including Kevin Shine, an old colleague of mine at Somerset in England, who's a fantastic bowling coach, and a guy called Dr. Mark King, and many others, Craig Ranson, who used to work with the England cricket team from a physio perspective with a particular interest in fast bowling, have decided that the old mixed action approach didn't really stand up particularly, and there are more simplistic ways of trying to deal with back pain from a coaching perspective. I mean, the first and foremost, how much are you bowling is a question that I think you need to have a look at, because a lot of the time back pain can come around as a result of over bowling and significant workloads. And it was interesting to hear the different approaches from the Australian and England sides around that. And Darren Lehman's obviously come in, made an impact, got the team back on track in terms of being a team, which has been really interesting, but said that he wasn't going to rotate bowlers in the same way as the previous regime has had. As a result, they've been in the field a little bit of time, and James Pattinson has picked up a back injury and has been sent home. Now, I don't know the causes of that, but I do know that from a workload perspective, if you monitor his overs and you monitor the length of his spells, then from an England perspective, we would say that he was in the red zone. And when you're in the red zone, you've got more opportunity of picking up a back injury. And that's come through research. So that's the first thing, is workload. And really monitor your workload, both in practice, the intensity of practice, and then obviously your match play, where you're going to be going at 100% for prolonged periods of time. Just monitor that first and foremost, because obviously as we fatigue, we get more prone to not being in the same position all of the time. Our actions become less repeatable, and that's when things can start to go wrong. The second thing is to, without senior action, it's difficult, but a lot of lower back pain, and in particular, if you're a right arm bowler, lower left back pain, which is the most common pace to pick it up, is caused by initially the back leg collapsing as it makes contact with the ground, as you make that transition from back foot to front foot. Now, the result of that is that often the front foot either continues going down towards fine leg, and then as a result, you've got to get the upper half of your body, and that's where that twist comes in, or equally, the front leg splays out to compensate for the back leg collapsing. And as a result, you're in what we call a side flexion position, which we see on a regular basis. You know, when somebody like Stephen Finn was ducking in and hitting the stumps on a regular basis not so long ago, you know, that was causing a little bit of side flexion in there. And it's been great to see that the way that the fast bowling coaches, David Saker, and I'm sure Kevin Shine back at Loughborough, have been working with him to try and get him working in straighter lines a little bit better. And as a result, he's not as much side flexion. So I would say, look at your workload. Have a look at the way that your back foot is landing and your back leg is landing, and if that's a big dip on that back leg, then there's a good chance that it's causing a side flexion position at point of release, which is where all the forces are going through the body.
And as a little aside to that, going back again to the prehabilitation stuff, it's always good to be able to get into the right position. To allow yourself to have the least possible twisting in the lower back. And that again means you're going back to that idea of stability and mobility. So although it's not going to be a central cause, you know, it's always a good idea to make sure you're doing your stretching, getting your hips nice and mobile, getting the thoracic spine nice and mobile so you can move around the top of the back instead of the bottom of the back, and strengthening up those core muscles. The abdominals, of course, and the glutes, and to a certain extent the hamstrings. So all those areas are worth looking at as well. But yeah, I think the key there is something technical. So look at that first, and I guess that's what we call falling away. That's what people tend to call it when you see that lean to the side like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you just picture that at point of release, that position and the squeeze that it has on that. For a right arm bowler onto that left side, it's not a surprise that bowlers do pick up pick up injuries. And of course, as people fatigue, you're more likely to get into those positions because your back leg is more likely to collapse. You're less likely that your transverse abdominis and your other core muscles are going to grip you sufficiently to hold you up. And that's where that workload thing comes in that I mentioned right at the front end of the conversation. And interesting to hear Jimmy Anderson talking, and he's a very, very aware and educated fast bowler now, not just in what he does, but also what the people around him do to give him the best chance of being on the pitch and the best chance of performing at the levels that he's presently showing. He understands all of that. And whilst he was a bit tongue-in-cheek when he had the Man of the Match award up at Trent Bridge to his best mate Alistair Cook, saying, you know, I'm not sure if 13 over spells are the way forward, it was a bit tongue-in-cheek between two mates that have just won a very tight test match. But actually, there was a message in there for Cookie as well to say, you know, we're one test into a 10-test series here. And that's come about through Jimmy's education process and his ability and his interest in what the people around him are doing, which gives him the chance to be out on that pitch and to do those skills that we're seeing that are so amazing.
Okay, so good luck, Adinath. Get back in touch with us and let us know what you're trying and let us know what works, because we don't often get a follow-up. Sometimes we do. We don't often get a follow-up, but it's nice to know that what we're suggesting is at least pointing someone in the right direction. So get back in touch, Adinath. Okay, let's head over to Pitch Vision Newsroom now for this week's Pitch Vision headlines with Daisy Cutter.
Thank you, David. Hi, I'm Daisy Cutter, and this is the Pitch Vision News. Pitch Vision CEO Richard Welsh will be in Cape Town to attend the opening of the new Stephen Coutts Trotter Indoor Cricket Centre at Bishop School. The brand new 5-lane centre features an under-4 Pitch Vision smart pitch and is a fitting tribute to the former student Stephen Coutts Trotter, who sadly passed away during the triathlon 2 years ago, and who was a keen cricketer at the famous school. At last, proof that the Pitch Vision Academy method can work for anyone. Cricket show host Berners has turned around his form in a dramatic fashion after 3 consecutive ducks with a stroke-filled century. The batsmen followed advice from Mark Garraway, showing that the team's advice is applicable to even the most fragile players. Berners was too emotional to provide a statement. And to finish up, here's the week's results from the Pitch Vision World League. Australia topped the bowling speed table with an average of 84.16 km per hour, leading England in second with 81.51 km per hour. South Africa have taken the most wickets with 479, leading India's 120. However, India lead the run scoring table with 7,884 runs scored. This is in no small part to user R. Zevni, who has notched up an incredible 387 runs, ahead of 16 other century makers in the list. Check out the Pitch Vision Interactive for more details. For more details on these stories, check out the show notes at pitchvision.com. That's the Pitch Vision news for this week. I've been Daisy Carter, and now it's back to the panel.
Well, Gareth, he's not here to gloat, but how about that? A ton after a series of ducks. It's classic Berners.
It is, and probably the ducks bit and then the ton is slightly extreme. But actually, when you look at, I don't know if anybody's ever put their stats on a spreadsheet and put a Manhattan like skyline of what their scores were over the course of a year. But actually, it's very rare for somebody to go out and just get 50s or 100s every single time they bat, because the nature of a game doesn't generally allow us to do it. And all of the research that we've done and is still going on across all of the different levels of cricket shows that, in many ways, the if you get a couple of low scores, then your instance and opportunity to get a big score next time round actually increases. And why that is, I don't know. But that's what it shows, and Berners has demonstrated that, and the forum of the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show.
Okay, Gareth, let's move on to better things. You ready for this week's soapbox?
Oh crikey, yeah!
Fantastic. Okay, so 60 seconds we have, uninterrupted, and this week it's Gareth's rant. Over to you, Mark Garraway.
I think one of the things about coaching is that whether you're working at a club or at a school, we can get a bit isolated at times and end up really just being about ourselves and working through what we're going to do to make ourselves better, which is valuable. But one of the things that I'm really lucky enough to do, and I've been doing it this week, is interviewing a number of prospective level four coaches to make some decisions about who goes on the course and who maybe is deferred to following years. And I get to hear loads of things from them about what they're doing with players, how they're going about it, what their methodology is, what their philosophy is, and their successes and things that they learn about themselves. And that's a really privileged position, but actually it's one that I think as coaches we can do ourselves. You know, we're never too far away from other coaches, whether it be somebody who's working in your club, somebody who's working in your school, or somebody up the road. So feel free to ask some questions, because we can learn a lot by listening to each other and asking each other questions about what we're doing and how we're going about stuff.
Okay, so that's the end of the show for this week. Before we go, we just need to decide who the winner is of this week's competition. Of course, the winner gets the prize of the online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. Gareth, we had Ramesh's question about slip fielding and Adinath's question about a mixed action, both to do with pain. What's going to give one of these guys a little bit of pleasure with a free course?
This week I'm going to go for Ramesh, because as most people will know who listens to this this podcast enough, I'm very passionate about fielding. I'm very passionate about catching in particular, and also in an individual ready position. So that's my winner this week, because it's hit my buttons.
Fantastic. Well done, Ramesh. And take a look at the course. Choose the one you want, and then get working on your slip catching positions and taking more catches. Now, Gareth, if someone wanted to get in touch with the show, have their question answered, and also possibly win a prize, what would they need to do?
Well, they could give us a call on 0208 816 7691, or they could drop us an email at coach@pitchvision.com.
Yes, indeed. There's also a lovely Twitter account, which is at PV Cricket Coach, and an even lovelier Facebook account, which is Pitch Vision Academy. You can find us in there, and there's lots of videos and things being posted. So it's exciting. You can also subscribe to this show in iTunes. If you go to iTunes and you do a search for Pitch Vision Academy, you'll find us in there. Just click on the subscribe link and you'll get the show every week. If you don't want to subscribe using iTunes, you can use pretty much anything else you like. Any popular podcatching program will work. Just head to pitchvision.com/academy, click on the podcast link, and you'll find the feed in there to stick it anywhere you want to stick it. So that's all for this week. Until next time, we'll see you next week. Cheers, Gareth.